no plan. This is going out to the whole wide west side. Know what I'm saying? Yeah. Break it down for me. Steady mobbing, rock, rock on. I was just a young boy living in the hub city,
Eastside Compton.
Back in the days when Ice Cube and Easy had every talking about, boy, you can't.
This is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9 on the west side at UBC.
Too short, bumped in every super spoke and told us all how to ride for the west coast.
My music and let me where you at, throw your gloves in the air and wave them like you just don't care. From LA to the Bay, what you say? All day, every day, any damn day. Take a look around, we got the whole world locked down. No, 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 don't stop, we won't stop. Can't stop, ride or die.
That's why I put it down for the west side.
Didn't seem that long ago.
Oh no.
We were still in 40s out the liquor store.
Oh no.
Mama started tripping, so it's time to go.
Mob to the park with the locusts.
Everybody broke, smoking roaches.
DJ Quick West and had every claiming he was from the CPT.
Y'all remember?
One time tried to clown. We had to burn this bitch on down.
One time for my was in incarceration.
I blaze a dime with you for having lots of patience.
To Astro Talk on CITR 101.9. So there's lots to talk about, of course, in the world of astronomy. Last week I talked about I don't think I called it the Event Horizon Telescope, but that's what it was. So they try to link up 8 telescopes around the world. And in that way, when they link telescopes up in a certain way, they can make it like, it's like an Earth-sized telescope. So the telescope lens is as big as the Earth. They've done that in other things and the Deep Space Network. They link up telescopes together around the world and they put more arrays, receivers around. So somehow it increases the receiving area or something like that. But this Event Horizon Telescope, it was supposed to, because they linked up 8 telescopes, it was supposed to be made as big as the whole world. So we had a telescope that was a huge telescope. I think the world's radius is 6,400 kilometers about. So the telescope was something like 10 or 12,000 kilometers. That's how big it was made because of this. And I was, while watching some other program on astronomy, which I love to do, there was, a scientist took us through the beginnings of his project, how he had to design and construct a telescope, and then I guess first they submit it to some kind of authorities and they get approved for the funding. But it doesn't, I never realized how complicated it was. So they said they had to design software in order to, when they take the data and when they accept the data, they got to process this data and then make sense out of it. So there's a lot of things that go into this and I never realized that. So he said just the fact that you have to develop computer programs and software and hardware to take this data into process. It just seemed to me, okay, data comes in and then you look at the data. It's very simple, but it's not like that. So in the Event Horizon telescopes, they had 8 telescopes around the world. And then each of these telescopes collected a lot of data. So they put all the data together in one, it was shipped to a certain locale. And then all the hard drives were put together, all the storage. And then they have to start to make something out of the data, which I never realized before. So you have to complex programs and certain methods and certain data, you got to be collected a certain way. So it was really a lot more complicated than I ever thought it might be. Because when I have a telescope, you just put it there, you aim at the sky, and you look. Pretty simple. But these other telescopes are very complicated. So in the Event Horizon telescope, when the scientists were processing the data, then they would, their goal was to get a picture. And I think their goal was to get like a round circle, and around the circle would be light, like rings of light. And they eventually got that, but at first they didn't get that. So they had to massage the data. I think the computer program, some of it didn't work well, or They had to debug it. So it was a lot more complicated process. So it's not only the planning and the theory of all this stuff. It's very complicated. And then it's getting the data. And sometimes they spent a lot of money on this and they weren't sure if it was going to work. So I didn't realize that how complicated something like this could be, because NASA always makes it look so easy. It always seems to work so well. They go off without a hitch. And there's some things, I think, like Israel sent a moon probe or an asteroid probe, and also the European Space Agency sent one, I think, to an asteroid, and they clunked out. They didn't work. So all this time, all this effort, all this brain power, all this really difficult stuff, and there's no assurance, it seems, that things will work out. And we just basically, or I always assumed that, okay, you point something up there, you get the data, and you say, okay, here it is. But it's not so simple. Okay, so a Canadian made us proud. What happened? A Canadian won a Nobel Prize. But what's happened is, there's an article here on space.com. It says, why the science community is upset about who won a Nobel Prize and who didn't. So I think they won the Nobel Prize for some aspect of cosmology. Okay, so I'm going to read this article. It's on livescience.com. And it says, a day ago, so yesterday, October the 9th, and the heading is, why the science community is upset about who won a Nobel and who didn't. The Nobel Prize in Physics this year has gone to two very different research threads and danced around some big societal issues, even as it celebrates distinguished work. The award was split to honor both cosmology research, exploring dark matter, and discovery of planets orbiting other stars. But the Nobel Prize is awarded to individual researchers, and that's where things seem to have gotten a little sticky this year. The Nobel Prize has been political in plenty of other years as well, and it's hardly surprising that politics has again entered the arena in 2019. On both sides of the honor, people have raised concerns about who was recognized and who was not, and what that says about modern science. So people are not happy. Let's see what it says. So says Kalpana Shankar, a professor of information and communication studies at University College Dublin in Ireland, and quote, when we ask these kinds of questions, it's not that these people don't deserve it, but who else aren't we talking about that might have deserved it? Often, people who should get credit for it haven't, and Nobels and other major prizes are not immune to the politics of that. This year's Nobel Prize in Physics, a little strange from first glance, in that it recognizes two quite different research topics. The Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences, which awards the Nobel Prize, joined the two research threads of cosmology and exoplanets by honoring what it described as contributions to our understanding of the evolution of the universe and Earth's place in the cosmos. It's poetic, but it's perhaps not what would be expected from the Academy. And Nobel Prizes go to individual living scientists, not research topics. So this year, the award was presented with one half of the purse going to James Peoples, a cosmologist at Princeton University. I think he's from Winnipeg, who has studied dark matter, and the other half being split between Michael Mayor and Didier Queloz, two astronomers based at the University of Geneva and the University of Cambridge, who discovered the first exoplanet orbiting a sun-like star. So I wonder why it took so long, because exoplanets have been discovered a long time ago. So I saw something on TV about the exoplanet and the wobble method of discovery. So basically, if you have a discus thrower, or the guy that throws that big hammer, and the hammer swings, so the person swinging the hammer, but then the hammer also swings the person, So there's a mutual force between the two. So they extended that to a planet and its star. So let's say the planet is orbiting a big star. So what the planet is doing, it's tugging on the planet. It's putting a force on the planet. But in reverse, the planet also tugs on the star. So the star wobbles slightly. So it's detecting that wobble that reveals the presence of the exoplanet. So how do they measure that? Well, when the planet wobbles, it kind of, you know, wobbles back and forth. So when it comes towards us, its wavelength is shifted to the blue, it's shortened. And when it wobbles away from us, the wavelengths are reddened and they become longer. So measuring this difference of wavelength gives an idea of how much the wobble is, which could tell where the star is, or if there's a planet orbiting that star that's causing this wobble. So it's quite complicated, but I think the wobble method was probably the first one that was used for exoplanets and for discovering exoplanets. And I think if they can, scientists now use the transit method. So when a planet transits or crosses in front, occults a big star, then it ever so slightly dims the starlight that we receive from that star. So it does this in a predictable pattern according to the period of orbit, and from that they can detect the exoplanet. So I believe it's possible the exoplanet, the first one, was done by the wobble method, where the planet tugs, or the star obviously tugs on the planet, but then in reverse, the planet also tugs on the star and the star wobbles back and forth. So it's in the interpretation of that wobble that the planet reveals itself, so they can say, oh, there's a planet doing that. Sounds quite complicated to me, but anyway, let's take the first half of this Nobel Prize. Peebles began his research on theoretical physics cosmology in the mid-1960s, searching for clues to what shaped the universe right after the Big Bang. He found those clues in the cosmic microwave background, often nicknamed the baby picture of the universe, which shows small spatial differences in temperature. The Academy puts together a scientific background paper exploring the members' reasoning for the award. In this year's document, the committee wrote that a 1965 paper Peebles wrote, positing that dark matter is necessary for galaxy formation, marked a moment when cosmology embarks on its way to become a science of precision and a tool to discover new physics. So I guess this Peebles, yeah, I believe he's from Winnipeg, now he's at Princeton, he's a cosmologist. So it says here, right, he wrote that, where I found it, this year, sorry, he said, okay, he posited in a 54 years ago, he said that dark matter is necessary for galaxy formation. And the Nobel Prize Committee believed this marked the moment when cosmology embarked on its way to becoming a science of precision and a tool to discover new physics. Okay, so that's how the Canadian won the Nobel Prize. And scientists who have been exploring the concepts typically called dark matter and dark energy, two mysterious phenomena that make up the vast majority of the universe, have been on Better's list for the Nobel Prize in Physics for years. Oh, so they haven't awarded one yet in dark matter. But the name most frequently suggested was that of Vera Rubin, an astronomer who died in 2016 and whose work is referenced once in the scientific background paper's exploration of Peebles' work. For years prior to her death, Nobel pundits chalked up the omission to the committee's tendency to favor experimental research over theoretical work, but this year theory seems to have triumphed, and that contrast is striking. Okay, so, part of it then was the thing about the cosmology. So he basically said stuff about dark matter, and the Nobel people seem to like that. Okay, so I'm going to go on to the second half of this paper, but first, why not go for a little break? So this is Marco. You are listening to Astra Talk on CITR 101.9. Feeling a bit crazy, or is your vision getting a little bit hazy? Or if you're feeling a bit funny, get your friends and listen to CITR 101.9 on Astra Talk with Marco at UBC. Depend on Marco for the latest in astronomy news on CITR's Astro Talk. Get a lot smarter now by listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9.
Well, I was kind of thinking that I might want to write, like, stuff for a magazine, dude.
You know you can do that at CITR and Discord, right?
What?
Yeah, you can review live shows where you get in for free, or music and books and stuff that's coming out, or do write-ups on artists and local issues for Discord or magazine.
That's sick, bro.
Yeah, just email volunteer at citr.ca and they can help you get started or just come into the station whenever.
Dude, I totally will.
You're listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9 with Marco and Sugar.
Time for some action. I got to be the main attraction. Blowing up like Tony Braxton. Pick my girls up to check the party uptown. I leave my shorty home because I'm trying to buy at the sports bar. Honey's everywhere and looking mink. What's up, star? Let's get a drink. What's up, star? I like to get to know who you are. Let's have drinks at the bar. What's up, star? I like to get to know who you are. What's up, y'all? I like to get to know who you are. Let's have drinks at the bar.
Send me wine up the ting till it pile up. Big bumper girl, just a wine and a while up. They must spoil me a stock till it pile up. My money no, so it my
you
money
dance like you mean it. Dance like you on fire and you want me to know. You move like you mean it, shorty. See the look on your face. You either wanna fight or wanna make love, maybe both. They got me looking at you, watching the way you wind it and pop it. One more time, go wind and pop it, yeah, yeah. Pop that drink, got me feeling alright. Pretty little thing, I could watch it all night. Pull up on that bumper, girl, I just might. Pull up on that bumper, girl, I just might. Baby, push back when I jump behind it. When I jump behind it. So when I jump behind it, push back on me. So baby, push back when I jump behind it. Baby, let me know you like it. Tonight, let's give them something to see. Everybody singing.
Welcome back. This is Marco. You're listening to AstroTalk. So let's look at the second half of the Nobel Prize. So the second half of the Nobel Prize was two people again, and it recognizes as an Iriomyce. Oh, sorry, I'm reading the wrong thing. Okay, recognize two people for exoplanet research. Somebody named Mayor and Kellos were honored for discovering a planet dubbed 51 Pegasus b, which they described in a paper published in 1995. It wasn't the first exoplanet discovery. Those planets orbit a pulsar and were much stranger on all fronts. Instead, 51 Pegasus b was the first planet discovering orbiting the sort of body we actually think of as a star, rather than orbiting the remains of a star that has exploded. Mayor and Kellos examined the light emitted by the star in question and measured tiny changes in that light caused by the planet's gravity, which created slight wiggles in the star's distance from Earth. It's probably like I talked about before. The wiggle or the wobble of the star, when it came towards Earth, its wavelength shortened. When it moved a bit away from Earth, its wavelength lengthened. So it moved back and forth, and its wavelength would alternatively shorten and lengthen. So let's see what this is. So it would measure tiny changes in light caused by the planet's gravity, which created slight wiggles in the star's distance from Earth. By now, scientists have spotted more than 4,000 planets orbiting other stars, so the Academy would always have needed to be judicious in selecting individuals in the field to honor. Two names sometimes offered among that group are Jeff Marcy and Paul Butler, who soon corroborated Mayor and Kellos's observations and turned out to have already gathered similar data about 51 Pegasi, given an interpretation that allowed for massive planets orbiting close to their stars. Marcy and Butler quickly identified 70 of the first 100 exoplanets discovered, according to NASA. Okay, so Marcy's and Butler's research has also been floated in Nobel prediction pools and is mentioned three times in the scientific background paper's discussion of the research conducted by Mayor and Kellos, but they were not included in the word citation, and that could be a particular reason, and there could be a particular reason. In 2015, Marcy's institution investigated nearly a decade of sexual misconduct accusations against him. Marcy resigned when material from the investigation was made public. Prescott Weinstein, who wrote the Space.com, given that the prize went to two researchers in exoplanets, it seems that part of the story here was that they snubbed Marcy, Jeff Marcy, who reportedly engaged in sexual misconduct towards students for decades. I believe the victims, some of whom I count as friends, While I'm glad that the committee is showing some ethical standards regarding which men will be recognized, perhaps they consider the ethics of persistently ignoring women's contributions in the field, as well as those who men who aren't white." End quote. So there was some reasons that Marcy was disqualified. The complications posed by both aspects of this year's Nobel Prize in Physics speak to ongoing systemic challenges in the science community in general and within individual disciplines. Rubin faced systemic obstacles directed at her gender throughout her career. Okay, so I talked about the Nobel Prize. Now let's look at another interesting story. Early Earthlings may have watched the galaxy center explode 3.5 million years ago. Wow, how did it explode? It's a supermassive black hole? Okay, so it says here the subtitle, "The center of the Milky Way exploded 3.5 million years ago and may explode again very soon." Interesting, will that affect us? The Fermi bubbles, illustrated in gamma ray light here, tower over the Milky Way and speak to a gargantuan cosmic explosion from the center of our galaxy. New research attempts to pinpoint that explosion's date. Okay, so here goes the article. They said it's somehow the Milky Way center exploded 3.5 million years ago. So this is on livescience.com, and it's called "Early Earthlings May Have Watched the Galaxy Center Explode 3.5 million years ago." It's dated 3 days ago, which is 7th. Okay, so October 7th. "At the center of our galaxy is a supermassive black hole, which apparently likes to blow bubbles." Interesting. There's all this stuff, like you hear about quantum foam and now cosmic bubbles. Wow. We got bubbles and foam in our universe. That's pretty cool. "Ballooning out of both poles of the galactic center, two gargantuan orbs of gas stretch into space for 25,000 light years apiece, roughly the same as the distance between Earth and the center of the Milky Way, though it's visible only in ultra-powerful X-ray and gamma-ray light. Scientists call these cosmic gas orbs the Fermi bubbles and know that they're a few million years old. What caused this bout of galactic indigestion, however, is one of our galaxy's biggest mysteries." Let's see. I tried to open up a Fermi bubble page. Let's see. Okay, what's a Fermi bubble? "Two huge bubbles of radio energy swirling out of the Milky Way's middle could be evidence of an ancient cosmic explosion, or maybe the start of a new one." Okay, so this article almost says the same thing. I wanted to see exactly what a Fermi bubble is, and you know what? It's not showing up. And you know what I did? I took that page and I accidentally... Okay, let's see if I can find it again. I accidentally closed it. Here we go. "Early Earthlings may have watched a cosmic explosion 3.5 million years ago." Okay, so "At the center of our galaxy is a supermassive black hole, which apparently likes to blow bubbles. Ballooning out of both poles of the galactic center, two gargantuan orbs of gas stretch into space 25,000 light years apiece. Now, by looking for evidence of the bubble of the vi- now let's start that again. Now, by looking for evidence of this violent bubble blowing event in the scorched clouds of gas in one of the Milky Way satellite galaxies, researchers have reconstructed a plausible explanation for the bubble's birth, according to a study to be published October 8th, which was yesterday, in the preprint journal arbigxiv.org. "The Fermi bubbles were created by an epic flare of hot nuclear energy that shot out of the galaxy's poles roughly 3.5 million years ago, beaming into space for hundreds of thousands of light years." Stuff that science fiction stories are made of, like when Darth Vader has all these rays that blow up planets and stuff like that. Okay, so... this effect would have been sort of like a lighthouse beam that shone out of our galaxy's middle for 300,000 years. Lead study author Joss Bland Hawthorne, director of the Sydney Institute for Astronomy at the University of Sydney, told Live Science in an email. And given the recent, cosmically speaking, date of the explosion that Bland, Hawthorne, and his team calculated, the blast may have even been visible to early humans. So says Bland Hawthorne in a video, and quote, "It's an amazing thought that when cave people walk the Earth, if they'd look out in the direction of the galactic center, they'd have seen some kind of giant ball of heated gas. They might have seen it, but they maybe thought nothing of it. Pieces of flares, that's another subtitle. To date, the explosion, the researchers looked to Hubble Space Telescope observations of the Magellan Extreme, a 600,000 light year wide arc of gas trailing behind two dwarf galaxies that orbit the Milky Way, known as the Small and Large Magellanic Clouds. So what happens in that, this is what I recollect, is the Large and Small Magellanic Cloud are two galaxies that orbit the Milky Way, and because of the giant gravitation of the Milky Way, it is ripping these galaxies apart, and it's sucking the gas from the Magellanic Clouds towards the Milky Way. So that trail of gas, I guess, is called the Magellanic Stream. From our vantage point on Earth, the Magellanic Stream spreads across half of the night sky as it surges through space some 200,000 light years away. That's far away, but still close enough for neighboring galaxies to feel the heat of any particular violent eruption from our galaxy's central black hole, according to the researchers. Indeed, while most of the hydrogen gas that makes up the Magellanic Stream is very cold, recent Hubble observations have revealed at least three large regions where the gas is unusually hot. Those regions, incidentally, align with the north and south poles of the Milky Way's galactic center. According to Bland Hawthorne, that's a clear sign that those hot regions were toasted by enormous flare-up of charged particles beaming out of our galaxy and into deep space. Okay, so the Milky Way, the central black hole, Sagittarius A star, burped, and it shot up some gas, and now it's being felt in these faraway places. So says Bland Hawthorne, this can only be done radiatively from the monster at the galaxy's nucleus. End quote. Using mathematical models, Bland Hawthorne and his colleagues showed how such an explosion of energy, known as a Seyfert flare, a type of outburst that may occur in galaxies with active black holes every 10 million years or so, could blast out of the galactic center and reach all the way to the hottest regions of the Magellanic Stream. They calculated that in order to reach those affected parts of the stream, the explosion must have occurred between 2.5 and 4.5 million years ago, a time when human early ancestors were already working the Earth. Well, I guess, what do these ancestors think of cosmic events like an eclipse that must have really scared them? While those primitive human ancestors may have seen the mysterious flare overhead, it's unlikely that they were impacted by its energy, thanks to Earth's protective atmosphere. Bland Hawthorne said, and quote, "That's good news for us. Seyfert flares occur somewhat randomly in galaxies like ours, and previous research suggests that they may be others on the way. And it's plausible that one explosion took place 10 million years ago, and the jet is now arriving in our direction," end quote. Here's another quote, Bland Hawthorne told Life Science, adding that flares can get trapped in the immediate vicinity of the black holes that made them for a million years, end quote. "But I think the most powerful burst from our sun would be about the same power, so bad for satellites and spacewalkers, but our atmosphere protects life pretty well," end quote. The team study will appear in a future issue of the Astrophysical Journal. So there's some more cool research. That is, if you like stuff like that, and I do, so I'm very interested in stuff like that. So to me, it's kind of interesting. There's a lot of perspectives coming in and out of this thing, and a lot of research, and sometimes you can marvel at what people come up with. Okay, so I'm going to go for another little break. And when we come back, let's see what's... I'm trying to put something there and it's not going. Why? It's not going in there. It's not loading up in the thing. So let's see, I'll try it once again. And when we come back, we'll talk more astronomy. It's not doing it. So I'll just play something else. I'll try to fix it. And thank you for listening. You are listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9.
Back on me, so baby push back when I jump behind it. Baby let me know you like it. Tonight let's give them something to see. Everybody's hanging.
Jump on the thing, put it on your one time. My phone no stop ring. Hello, man, I ring off my cellular. No chat, but tell me what you tell her. Jump up, me the body jump till the cocky broke. My girl, you know see nothing when you cocky top, rough it up on the dresser top. We no need bed, me a done. Every man have to do what me say. Hello,
I want it. Love when you wind up on it. Big big bumper, you don't stall it. All if I in the morning.
Baby, push back when I jump behind it. When I jump behind it, so when I jump behind it, push back on me. So baby, push back when I jump behind it. Baby, let me know you like it. Tonight, let's give them something to see. Everybody's in here.
Welcome back. I'm having some problems here. Somehow the songs are not loading. But anyway, we'll go on to something else. So I was talking about, Nobel Prize in Physics and then our black hole at the center. They believe that it exploded. So what does that mean when they said exploded? Well, it could mean a lot of different things, could it? So basically exploded means they shot out rays of X-rays or something else out of its poles, and it happened, I'm not sure, 3.5 million years ago, but they're saying that it could happen again. So, that's interesting, isn't it? So, I will go on to another topic now. So, what are we going to talk about? We just talked about early Earthlings may have watched the galaxy center explode 3.5 million years ago. Now, wouldn't it be fun to watch a galaxy center explode? Okay, let's talk about the largest things in the universe. So I like this LiveScience.com. It's talking about the biggest 12 biggest objects in the universe. So the universe is a big place and it's full of big things. Planets, stars, galaxies, and clusters of galaxies extend upward on ever more massive scales. Here we marvel at some of the record holders in different cosmic categories, perhaps feeling humbled by the universe's ability to produce entities of incredible size and grandeur. So here's the largest exoplanet. It's called GQ, GQ like the magazine, GQ Loopy B. So GQ, and then L-U-P-I, and then B. Astronomers weren't sure what to make of this mysterious GQ Loopy B when it was first discovered in 2005. Orbiting a young star around 2.5 times farther than Pluto is from our sun. The companion object seemed to be either a planet or a brown dwarf, which is actually a type of small star. Subsequent observations have yet to clear up the confusion, but the best estimates suggest GQ Loopy B has a radius of about 3.5 times of Jupiter, meaning that if it's an exoplanet, it's the largest one ever found. So that's pretty big, 3.5 times bigger than Jupiter. Wow. Okay, what's the largest star? UY-SCUTI. So UY and then S-C-U-T-I. UY-SCUTI is a hypergiant star with a radius that's around 1,700 times larger than the sun, making it the biggest known star in the universe. If someone were to place UY-SCUTI at the center of our solar system, Its edge would extend just beyond the orbit of Jupiter. Gas and dust streaming from the star would extend even farther out, beyond the orbit of Pluto, or around 400 times the Earth-Sun distance. So here it has a picture of UY Scuti and a small little dot, which is our Sun. It's quite amazing how big stars can get. The largest nebula, the Tarantula. So let me quiz myself. I think that's in a Large Magellanic Cloud, and it's bigger than any nebula in our Milky Way. Let's see if I'm right. Both the largest known nebula and most active star forming region in our local galactic neighborhood, the Tarantula Nebula, stretches for more than 1,800 light years at its longest span. Also known as 30 Doradus, the object is located 170,000 light years from the Earth in the Large Magellanic Cloud, a small satellite galaxy that orbits our Milky Way. Rather than a killer arachnid, this Tarantula is a small nursery within its beautiful folds of gas and dust. Young stars are being born. Okay, pretty cool. So now the largest empty spot. There's a super void in Eridanus. In 2004, astronomers noticed a gigantic region of empty space in maps created by NASA's Wilkinson Microwave and Anisotropy Probe, WMAP satellite, which scanned in exquisite detail, the cosmic microwave background or the leftover radiation from the Big Bang. The spot, which spans 1.8 billion light years across, according to Vice, is strangely devoid of star, gas, dust, and even dark matter. While they have seen previous voids, researchers remain baffled as to how exactly one of this size and scale formed. So there's an empty void. Wow. The largest galaxy is IC1101. So our Milky Way galaxy is around 100,000 light years across, but that's fairly average for a spiral galaxy. In comparison, the largest known galaxy, called IC1101, is 50 times larger and about 200,000 times more massive than our galactic home, stretching for an impressive 5.5 million light years. IC1101 is so big that if placed where the Milky Way is now, its edge would reach past our nearest galactic neighbor Andromeda. That's pretty big. Largest black hole. Now that's cool. TON618. That's a good name. TON, ton. Supermassive black holes are thought to lurk in the center of every galaxy and can clock in at many millions of times the mass of the Sun. But the biggest known black hole can be found powering a distant quasar, giant objects in the early universe spewing out insane amounts of radiation. This one, known as TON618, has an estimated mass of 66 billion suns. Wow, that's pretty big. 66 billion suns, the largest black hole. Kind of big, isn't it? Okay, largest galactic farts. Fermi bubbles, that's pretty cool. In 2010, astronomers using the Fermi Space Telescope discovered colossal structures emerging from the Milky Way. These massive blobs, which can only be seen in certain wavelengths of light, are a towering 25,000 light years tall, a quarter of the Milky Way's width. Researchers believe the bubbles are the result of an ancient feeding frenzy that our galaxy's central black hole experienced, resulting in enormous belches of energy. The largest object is called the protocluster SPT2349-56. Back when the universe was only a tenth of its current age, 14 galaxies behind began crashing together and forming the most massive known gravitationally bound cosmic object, protocluster SPT2349-56, squeezed together in a space that's only about three times as big as our Milky Way. The mega merger will eventually combine into a single galaxy weighing 10 trillion times the mass of the Sun. Additional observations have revealed that around 50 additional galaxies surround the structure, which will settle into a gigantic object known as a galactic cluster, in which many galaxies orbit one another. Well, I haven't finished this list, but you know what? I'm sorry, I got to go to work. So thank you for listening. You have been listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101 with Marco. You have a